Sexuality Centre presents Muffin Talk with Beate.
Kia ora and welcome to our Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Centre in Epsom. We are a centre for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to join me in the studio to talk about our centre, our programs, or about social justice. Today, my visitor is Brother Kevin Dubbin. Brother Kevin, a warm welcome. Hi, Rama, to our radio program.
Kia ora. Thank you very much.
Brother Kevin Dubbin is a Maoist brother walking alongside young adults searching for a meaningful spirituality that is future-oriented. He has spent 20 years in the Pacific, accompanying young adults in both career and vocational choices. He completed degrees in counseling and in spirituality. Brother Kevin will come to our Mercy Spirituality Center on Saturday, 21st of March, to facilitate a workshop on compassionate communication. The workshop will take place during the day from 9:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. and is limited to 16 persons. Brother Kevin, you are a Maoist brother and you have spent 20 years in the Pacific. What countries did you live in?
I first went in 1984 to Fiji and then moved to Kiribati. And for the most part, I've been in Kiribati. I did spend a short time in Tonga. And I suppose if you count Australia as Pacific, I was four years in Australia. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So you speak Kiribati?
I do speak Kiribati, yes.
So one language or many languages?
Basically, it's one language with different... what's the word?
Dialects.
Dialects or...
Regional.
Regional, yeah. A bit like New Zealand has, down the south they say bird instead of word or bird or whatever. Yeah. And so basically, yes, its advantage is there's one language.
Oh, that's good. And I understand that you studied counseling and spirituality. Did you decide to concentrate on counseling and spirituality due to your experience in the Pacific?
Partly. When I was in Australia, I had the opportunity to do clinical pastoral education and psychotherapy. And it was that, plus good people I met, that eventually led to my wanting to complete it was actually theology. It was looking at the how our particular spirituality could find its way into Kiribati, having come from France originally, then through New Zealand. And at the same time, while in Kiribati, I was asked to pilot a program of training community counselors. So when I felt the call in all sorts of ways to return to New Zealand, which I didn't want to do while I was too old. I wanted to do more than just twiddle my thumbs at 80. I decided it would be a good idea to be employable. So at that stage, having attained a master's in theology, I thought I'd better do something to make me employable. And so I did the counseling degree. Yes.
So you went to New Zealand, got the degree, and then you used what you learned at Kiribati.
No, I actually completed the counseling degree here in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Yes, and clinical hours were done in New Zealand.
Yeah, and did you ever do counseling in Kiribati?
Oh, yes. In fact, it was somewhat embarrassing at times because of my experience in Australia working in an acute admissions ward at a psychiatric hospital. Some of the doctors in Kiribati would refer their psychotic young people to me, which was a little embarrassing at times. But it was a very good learning experience. And I have to say, at that time, the internet came into Kiribati, finally. And without that access to good material, it would have been much more difficult.
But the doctors must have trusted you, otherwise they wouldn't have trusted you, their clients or their patients to you.
Mm.
And can you give us some examples of your work with the young adults in the Pacific? Maybe especially in Kiribati, but generally in the Pacific?
In the Pacific it was, walking alongside is a good expression.
Mm-hmm.
It's what I mean by brother. I think brother is a word that we don't make enough use of, or sister for that matter. It's the way you relate to people. And I think if you're a brother alongside people, a lot more change can happen, and I think more quickly even. One of these days I dream of the major Christian churches taking Jesus seriously when he says, call no one on earth your father. And yet we do it all the time, don't we, in our church tradition?
Yes, it's a challenge for me as a German, yeah, because we have a different word for the priest and for the father.
Whereas
in New Zealand, it's the same word. And yes, I understand what you mean. And what you said reminded me of when I interviewed Christina Cathro about spiritual direction, mm-hmm, and she said she didn't want to be called spiritual director. Mm-hmm. She would like to be a spiritual companion walking alongside, just what you were saying.
Yes.
And so she's not giving directions, but she's helping people to find their own ways.
Indeed. And sometimes that means asking questions that help people clarify, where they're going. And sometimes it can mean giving information, but not in a top-down kind of way, you know.
Yeah. It's the companion and brother and sister.
Yes.
And for those of you who've just tuned in, you're listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. This program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Epsom. If you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz/muffintalk or send me an email at muffintalk840@gmail.com. My visitor today is Brother Kevin Dobbin. Brother Kevin is a Maoist brother, and he spent 20 years in the Pacific working with young people and walking alongside with them as a spiritual companion or a spiritual brother. Can I say like that?
Oh, yes, that's fair enough, yes.
I had a look at your website, FM Connection.
Mm-hmm, which is out of date.
Oh, well.
A little.
But you said that you are a part of a community of Maoist brothers and young men on mission. What do you mean with this?
The community we have here in Auckland, it began actually in Wellington, but it then moved to Auckland, is, well, FM Connection simply stands for Faith for Mission, in the footsteps of Mary, who first followed Jesus. So,
it's not Radio FM.
And it's not Radio FM, certainly. I like using language like that because all of a sudden it wakes people up to, it shocks them a little bit, like the language Jesus uses. And what it is we have young men with us at the moment who are all in the process of discovering where God's dream for them might be. And that's a requirement, I guess, for young men coming into the community, is that they're entering a community and they want to form community, and they want to be in a safe place where their faith is taken seriously and at the same time stretched, because many come with this is too simplistic to say it this way, but they come with the faith they've grown up with or that they've just discovered, and sometimes it might be too black and white, or too it might even be too childish rather than childlike. And so to stretch their understandings is part of the challenge of being in the community, so that they can begin to claim an adult faith. Mm-hmm. And in the process, that may mean, well, where's God wanting me to be? Where's he leading me? What's God's dream for me? And usually, people think often, when they're first confronted with this or challenged with this, they think God's dream and their dream have to be at opposite ends of the pole. Whereas in fact, I think God's dream for us, each of us, is deep within us, and it's what we truly want. And so it's a matter of beginning to learn to discover that.
And so it's also discovering your own mission.
Yes, definitely. Oh, and when I say mission, you know, I believe that we can't be One of the things I think young people are looking for, young adults, they're looking for two things basically at the moment, it seems to me. They're looking for spirituality that's going to ground them. And I say spirituality rather than religion. And they're also looking for community, a sense of community. But if either of those two things are going to be authentic, they've got to spill out in care for others and for we Marists. That means care for the most neglected young people. And as Marist Brothers, we focus on young people. So their being in the community entails two dimensions of that mission, hospitality to other young adults, and also an outreach to poor young people, which is what we're doing through going to one school and hopefully have an experience sometime this year in an insertion experience into Fiji, where brothers and lay Marists are working together with needy young people. And also, did I mention locally? Yes, locally we have a school we go to as well.
It reminds me of the pastoral plan that was launched last year with Bishop Pat, and it's fit for mission.
Yes.
So you really get the young people fit for mission?
Yes, indeed. Yes. And then if it's going to be effective, it requires a good solid formation, and that formation happens best, I think, by osmosis. And that was Jesus' approach. He had the disciples with him for a year, well, anything from between 1 year and three. And they would have learned.
What do you mean with osmosis?
Osmosis means being alongside, living with. In the past, and probably I was one of the last, or my generation was one of the last, when you went straight from school to what your life choice was. These days, people generally take a much longer time to make a life choice. As I heard one Aboriginal say, you white fellas, you know, you start at 8 and finish at 35. Said, we have 3 days for our initiation into adulthood. So one of the things is, how can they see us? You see, when I was at school, the only teachers often were brothers and perhaps two or three lay people. But these days, you don't see brothers, and you can't tell them by their garb either.
Yeah, so even if you see them, you don't realize that they are brothers. Yeah.
And so the best way is to come and live with us. And that's precisely what Jesus said to his disciples. Come and see, come and live with us.
And I think that's especially important if young people don't have brothers or sisters around.
Definitely.
Or if they come from a broken family, then having brothers who say, come and live with us. And I also understand that you've been focusing on nonviolent and or compassionate communication for more than 15 years. That's quite an experience.
Well, it's really about 10 specifically on that. I one of the people that I was very taken with when I was doing the counseling in-service courses through Massey was Pat Thompson. She's an American, and she's done her PhD in nonviolence. And I was quite taken with her presentation, and so I've looked it up, and I draw on the, for want of a better word, the founder of that approach, Marshall Rosenberg. And he's been to very conflictual areas in the world and works with this approach. So I draw on his approach quite a deal. And why have I done it for so long? I can't remember how many workshops I've done now to a whole variety of people from all walks of life and all creeds and cultures. I've done at least 20 workshops. Why I keep doing it is because I know I need to, for my own sake, to practice this, I like to call it a compassionate, contemplative communication, because so often we react. And if we react, there's no thinking, there's no reflection. And so this gives people a few tools that they probably innately were aware of anyway. And it gives them the opportunity to practice it.
And when you say contemplative, that means that you take a breath at least before you say something.
At the very least. but it's a whole different way of thinking about things and trying to think in terms of feelings and needs. Because if feelings are recognized, and in any listening exercise, if you can hear the feeling the person has, you've heard them and they know you've heard them. But if you don't acknowledge the feeling and you just feed back the content of what they say, you've missed the point altogether.
I think that's a shame with social media. When people are communicating via electronic devices, they cannot get the vibes.
Except with Skype, perhaps, or something like it, where you can see the face, and that's the next best thing after face-to-face, I think.
You don't have all the senses, but at least you have the yes. sight also, and yes. in addition to the view of the words. And
Yes.
And the workshop that you facilitate on Saturday, the 21st of March, will be an interactive workshop. Does that mean that the participants have to play role plays?
Let me explain what I mean by interactive first. I think the best learning method is interactive. It's by doing that we learn best.
Yes, yes.
And perhaps we even learn best from our mistakes.
Do you want the people to make mistakes?
Not quite, no. But it should. And role play has a place. I don't use it a lot. What I prefer to work with people is that they give real situations, because it's real situations that get them at the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that gives them pause to relook at things they've done in the past or in the immediate past or things they were even anticipating. And they might begin to think, oops, I need to try a different tack here. And then that's... So if they're dealing with real situations, I think the learning is far more effective.
So when you say real situations, do you ask the people to think of something?
Oh, yes.
Because it's different for every person.
Oh, yes, indeed it is. So that's why the number is restricted to 16, is it?
16, yes.
So they can work in little groups of four. And that enables – and, of course, you know, a given in this sort of work is that – what's shared here stays here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
so
really
nobody
important.
Has to worry that it's
no.
next day it's on
no.
Facebook or anything
no.
like that.
No, and I'm not going to use it to write up anything or research or said so and so said this and that. That would be ridiculous. It would be a complete betrayal of trust.
Have you done something similar in Kiribati?
Yes, I have. I've done it with quite a wide group of people,
yeah.
nurses, teachers, in the Pacific, in Fiji, it was with a range of people looking at religious life and priesthood and how they might cope. And interestingly, among that group, I had people from Papua New Guinea, Bougainville, where all the trouble was. And so I could see that it made a difference if they took that approach. But it's an approach that really has to be practiced, and that's the hard part. It's always the hard part. Try going on a diet. That's the hard part.
But the approach is always the same, no matter if you are working in Kiribati or in Bougainville or if you're working in New Zealand. Because with the different people, you can still use the same approach?
This is Marshall Rosenberg's work. He's worked in Nigeria and the Cameroon. He's worked in Israel and Palestine. In fact, one of his YouTube snippets, he tells the story of traveling with a taxi cab driver, and for the first 10-15 minutes, this cab driver didn't want anything to do with him because he was American, and it's Americans who have their bombs here and they are ruining our Palestinian life. Well, by the end of his time with that taxi driver, he was invited home for dinner. So it was just that gentle, firm, persistent, compassionate approach, non-violent approach, that won that taxi driver over. I can give you an example from my own experience. I remember walking back from Lygon Street in Melbourne once, and I saw something that absolutely horrified me, and it always has done as a boy, since as a boy. I saw a guy kicking a woman who was crouched down by the left back wheel of a car. And I was on the other side of the street with a couple of brothers that we'd had a meal out. And I saw this, and I just left the brothers and went over there. And surely this must have been God at work, because I wouldn't have known what to say. I said, "Do you need a hand there, mate?" Because I didn't say, "You shouldn't be doing that," or something like that, which is a kind of violence. Mm. "Do you need a hand there, mate?" The woman said, it's okay. But he had stopped. And she stood up, and they got in the car. What happened after that, I don't know. But at least it had somehow given him a different take on what he was doing.
You surprised him with being different.
Yes. I don't know how. I didn't anticipate saying that. I don't know how it happened. But
so how do you get the Holy Spirit working then in these moments?
Well, I trusted him, I guess, or I trusted her.
So you'd have to help the people to find, yes, to listen to the Holy Spirit, that you don't do the first action, which would be like what you said, to tell him you shouldn't do that, because that's the natural way.
That is,
but you say, take a deep breath and...
And that's a kind of violence, and that's why one of the reasons I need to practice this all the time is, well, there are times, you know, I come from a Celtic background, and, you know, they talk about the hot-tempered Irish, don't they? I've always had, when I've seen injustice, I was bullied at school, so that didn't help, you know. So when I see injustice, I really get fired up. And I've learned, I think, to take it more gently. And I want to go in there and do something. So the kind of violence I'm talking about is not just the physical stuff or even the verbal stuff. I'm naturally impatient sort of a person. I have, you know, I see great things needing to be done, and I want them sort of done as soon as possible, even if, and usually if it involves me doing them. But so when I say I'm an impatient sort of person, I think impatience is a kind of violence to the self. And so that's why I need to practice this all the time.
And as you said, you learn from your own experience.
Mm. Mm.
And there are anger management programs out, and they usually take several weeks. What can participants expect to take home from your one-day workshop?
Hopefully a different language with which to think about what they're doing. A language based on, I don't want to give too much away, they might not come to the workshop. But it's a language based on reflecting and observing, and noting the feelings, the needs they have, and learning to make requests rather than demands. One of the things that men particularly, but women too, tend to do is we tend to say, "I feel that," or "I feel you." That's not really a very helpful way of going about things. Really what they're saying is, "I think that. I think you." So feelings are indeed feelings. So I feel disappointed, I feel sad, I feel hurt. Those are feelings. And needs. You know, if you've been brought up in a Christian home, often we think we have to be nice all the time. Well, that's unrealistic. You know, that's why I like the stories of Jesus being angry with the disciples or in the temple, you know, because he was angry. And anger's necessary, because without it, there's no effective change. But it's how we address it, how we express it. That's the important thing. And the feelings we have always point to the needs we have. So, for example, if you say something like... Well, this is the first reaction, you know. "You make me angry when you do that." Well, that's not really very helpful. That's violent language. Whereas saying something like, "I feel annoyed," or you can be stronger if you wish, "I feel angry when I see this happening." Because I think I need respect. Say, for instance, the dialogue between a teenager and his mother. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So in the workshop, we'll be using real-life examples like that. Yes.
Yeah, so you can be this child, if or the mother, whoever said that, gives the chance for the other person to justify what they have been doing, because you only say, when I see that. You don't say when you do that, but when you see that, and it's all from your part.
Yes. When I see that, I feel, rather than, you know, you. Because one of my tricks is, when you point to somebody, and in our culture at least, we point with one index finger, and then I say, but hang on a minute, now there are three fingers pointing at you.
Exactly. And that must be really challenging when you do this kind of training in other cultures. So that you mentioned other cultures, and how is anger expressed in Kiribati to people? Because I often have the impression that many people in other cultures, they are not so loud, or they don't talk so much as like Europeans. Maybe it's only behind closed doors, I don't know.
Yes. Give them a few beers and you'll see it. I've seen some interesting things, people going and burning down houses because they didn't like what somebody was saying. But again, you see, that whole situation was violent. This particular woman was called all sorts of names and she got fed up with it.
Mm-hmm.
And her only way of handling that was to burn somebody's house down, which is relatively easy to do. They're thatched roofs on poles. So in Kiribati, at least, they are.
Yeah.
I think that we have far more in common as human beings than we realize. We sometimes make a huge thing about cultural difference. And there certainly are cultural differences, you know, even among so-called Europeans, there are cultural differences. How would you describe the Australian New Zealand?
Even among the Germans, the Northern Germans are very different to the Southern Germans when it comes to certain reactions.
Yes, and you can see it in pockets of Auckland. There's different reactions all over the place. So I think we have far much more in common.
Yeah.
And if you look at the faces of people, once you learn little things, like I remember working with a doctor from Kerala. We had one young man that we were working with, and he would keep nodding his head from kind of in a figure eight sort of fashion, and I thought he was saying no all the time, and I began to realize that he was saying yes. And when I first went to Kiribati, people, when they mean yes, just flick their eyebrows, and some of them are clever enough to flick only one. And I had to tell them, you're going to have to use a word.
So whatever cultural background people are, they are welcome to join this event on the 21st of March. And thank you very much, Brother Kevin. That was really helpful. So now we have a better picture of what's coming. And, what else is coming in the Spirituality Center? On Thursday, 19th of March, Marama PDP will be sharing knowledge and protocols of flax weaving. If you'd like to learn more about flax weaving and the social element of weaving, please come and learn more about the sacred skill of Maori culture. Thursday, 19th of March, from 7 to 9 p.m. And then on Saturday, 21st of March, from 9:30 a.m. in the morning to 3 p.m., Brother Kevin, whom we just heard, will facilitate an interactive workshop in learning and practicing the skills of effective nonviolent communication for better relationships. So it addresses everybody. It's Saturday, 21st of March, in our Spirituality Center. And if you would like to have some other information about our events, have a look at our website, www.mercyspiritualitycenter.org.nz, or give us a call. And please always give us a call if you'd like to participate, to register. It's Auckland 09-638-6238. And I wish you all a good Friday and a blessed week ahead. Thank you, Brother Kevin.
Thank you.